Hello and welcome to a new episode of the East-West Coffee Shop, brought to you by the Younger Generation Leaders Network. I'm Julia Berghofer, and today I will speak with Nick Williams, Simon Lunn and Katarina Kurtisova about the upcoming NATO summit on June 14 and about the new strategic concept. What will be on the summit agenda, what discussions will we see around climate and arms control, and what's going on behind the scenes? We apologize in advance to our listeners. Unfortunately, we had some technical difficulties while recording this session, so the sound might not always be perfect. We nevertheless hope you will enjoy this episode. Before we start our conversation, let me introduce to you our experts. Katarina Kurtisova is a policy fellow with the European Leadership Network and a member of the YGLN. Katarina is an expert on Russia-West relations, arms control, Arctic security and the climate nuclear nexus. She also coordinates the ELN's contact group on West Russia relations. Nick Williams is a senior associated fellow with the ELN. Nick had a long-standing career with NATO's international staff, including as head of operations for Afghanistan and Iraq. And throughout his career, Nick has served in senior positions with NATO, EU and British missions for Afghanistan, Iraq and Bosnia and Herzegovina. And we have Simon Lunn on this episode today. Simon is a senior associated fellow with the ELN as well. Simon has acted as Secretary General of NATO's Parliamentary Assembly until 2007. Prior to this, he held positions with the US Congressional Research Service, the European Parliament, and he acted as a head of plans and policy with NATO's international staff. It's a great honor to have such a distinguished crowd on the East-West Coffee Shop. And let's start with you, Katarina. You have been appointed as a participant of the NATO 2030 Young Leaders Group, which is a group of emerging experts that was established to feed into the Secretary General's 2030 initiative from a younger perspective. Katarina, can you provide us a bit with background information on what was the specific task of this group? What were the key topics being discussed? How is it composed? And how does the group's work feed into the NATO 2030 process?
Thank you, Julia. It's a pleasure to be here with you today. I'd like to start by providing a little bit of context to our work. As part of the NATO 2030 agenda, the Secretary General has appointed an expert group, which published a report in December last year. And he's also been consulting with representatives of the private sector, civil society, and the younger generation. And within this context, 14 young professionals from across the alliance were appointed as NATO 2030 young leaders, including myself, to advise the Secretary General on how the alliance should adapt for the next decade and beyond. We were all aged between 25 and 35. And we represented diverse professional fields, so from lawyers and researchers to space engineers, journalists, and diplomats. And our task was quite simple, to provide fresh thinking and ambitious moonshot ideas on how NATO should adapt to be able to face tomorrow's challenges. And even though these were moonshot ideas, we tried to root them and root all of our recommendations in what is possible within the North Atlantic Treaty. We carried our work throughout the period of 4 months between November and February, and we focus on five themes, namely the future of defense and deterrence, NATO's values, climate security, NATO's partnerships, and emerging technologies. And I personally oversaw the drafting of our climate chapter and recommendations. In February, our Young Leaders Report was published and handed over to the Secretary General. And the bottom line recommendation that we put forward was that for NATO to be able to continue to fulfill its core mission and respond to future threats, it needs to deter, defend, and provide security differently in 2030 and beyond. Many of our ideas were positively received by the Secretary General, including the focus on economic resilience, responsibility sharing as a new metric, or emission reduction efforts. And only time will tell which ideas will eventually be discussed at the summit and which of them will help shape the new strategic concept. But I really believe there is a genuine interest in this new approach to security.
Thank you, Katarina. This was a fascinating overview. I'm turning now to Simon and Nick, who will put what Katarina just said into context. Now, the Young Leaders views feed into the Secretary General's 2030 initiative, which put on the table many recommendations for the summit and for the new strategic concept. And in parallel, there is also the reflection group process going on. The reflection group has just lately produced a report. Now, none of all these recommendations have been so far endorsed by the nations. Could you explain a bit what is actually going on behind the scenes and what will happen with all these recommendations?
Well, I think that our best contribution or the most useful contribution we would make would indeed be to give some additional background to what happens now in terms of these new ideas, both from the reflection group and indeed from the young leaders, all of these refreshing ideas. What happens now to those ideas? What's the process? What happens in order that those ideas contribute to the emergence of a new strategic concept at the end of the year? The first thing I think that we would be keen to point out is that we talk a lot of the views of the Secretary General. We talk a lot about NATO as if it's a monolithic organization with a single personality. And of course, it's not. The thing that is often missing from these discussions is the essential point that the alliance is 30 members, and it's 30 members governed by consensus. The ideas, however good, however brilliant, however compelling, however fresh, have to go through the filter of consensus. In other words, the real question is not the views of the Secretary General. We can come back to that in a minute, the role of the Secretary General. I think Nick will have something to say on that. I certainly would more. But it's not so much the Secretary General's views, it's what the members think. What are the members going to make from their different national standpoints as to these new views, and what do they want? What do they see emerging at the end of the year? What sort of an alliance? Do they accept the broader and the deeper propositions of that have so far come through? So I think what we would like to do, and I think Nick will comment more now on that, is essentially to remind us that the crucial element in this is not the international staff. It's not the view of the organization itself, it is the views of the members.
Thank you, Simon. Turning to you, Nick, what do you think?
Just building on that, Katarina said that the system is producing a lot of input and it's unclear what the output is going to be. Well, output is going to be, is being worked on at this very moment. The reflection group had a total of 138 recommendations. Foreign ministers who were presented with a report couldn't possibly be expected to endorse, let alone agree, all these 138 recommendations. And so what the sector has done is boiled down these recommendations into eight general categories. She is putting a week until the summit to the council to discuss. So this is playing a role, which is his role to play, of stimulating the alliance NATO members to achieve which only they can do. Among the categories of general propositions are one, to enhance the political dimension of and coordination of NATO. A second one is enhance defense and deterrence. One as Katarina has said, is resilience, boost resilience. Another is NATO's role in climate change. And all these eight general propositions and recommendations boiled down from 138 will be put to the summit leaders in June. So it's the inputs, I think, have been very, but we're going through a process in NATO of refining and agreeing what, in essence, they mean.
Nick and Simon, how do you believe the recommendations on critical issues where there are many divergent views, new topics such as China and climate security, and traditional topics such as Russia and arms control, how will they materialize in a summit communique and, even more important, in a strategic concept? What are the options for the Secretary General to support consensus among the allies?
Carry on a little bit of what Nick was elaborating on, really to stress the fact that the process he's describing is the process of reaching consensus within the NAC, within the NATO Council, at this moment, at the ambassadorial level. And so what the Secretary General is doing is listening to what the Council have to say, because they are, after all, already probably under instruction from national capital. And his job is now to look at the various responses and begin to focus in on what he sees is getting general agreement. And that's a very arduous process. And I think, again, we often miss it in our deliberations. And it is one in which the Secretary General plays a key role. And the key role, in fact, demonstrates very much the duality of his role. Duality in the sense that he is, on the one hand, the leader, the head of international staff, the leader in that sense of the alliance, but at the same time, the civil servant of the nation. And it's that combination that he now has to employ in terms of managing this process. It requires a great deal of skill, and it's one in which I think he is winning general plaudits for what he's doing. But the Project 2030 is very much his project, and he therefore has to, on the one hand, lead, but on the other hand, listen. And at the end product will hopefully be something that the leaders can all then sign on to. This is a process where language is very carefully debated, and where nations in their own way negotiate their different positions. It is a very arduous, laborious process, but it's one that is important that we understand it in terms of understanding the conclusions, which subjects will the members themselves finally accept and support, and in which way will they want those subjects represented in the strategic concept. I think it's quite clear on China that this is one of the new elements, one of the elements that was not in the strategic concept of 2010. As a slight digression, I think it's important to remember that many of the issues that the reflection group brought out were indeed, in some respect or other, reflected in the 2010 strategic concept. Not in any detail, but even climate change creeps in, although it has a very glancing reference. On the other hand, China does not appear, and therefore that will be a subject of considerable debate and discussion as to what sort of a note we adopt, the alliance adopts, in terms of its future policy towards China.
Nick, what is your view on this?
As Simon has said, there's an intense process, consensus forming, consensus building. And I think China will test of this consensus forming and consensus building. There in London, in the London mini summit in 2019, there was agreement that China represented a risk and an opportunity. And it was very balanced. I think today things have moved on and the risk balance ratio will be slightly different. NATO will still want to have a constructive relationship with China. And that's, I think, what it will say. But it will also want to guard against and say that it's guarding against the risks of China. And the element of the policy that is now developing, which will eventually go into the strategic concept, is a way of guarding against the risks. So China will be portrayed still as an opportunity, but have a considerable risk to the rules-based order, international order. And then NATO allies will view that they have to build resilience against China and the risks that it poses.
Simon, let's come to the issue of arms control. Do you think that nations pay enough attention to arms control? Also, some countries will be certainly pushing for a strong commitment to arms control in the communique, while others might be more cautious. Can you comment a bit on that?
Two parts to that question. On the one hand, current strategic concept, the 2010, actually says all the right words, expresses all the right things in support of arms control. On the second point, the reflection group does pay attention to arms control, but it links it immediately to nuclear deterrence. And obviously, there is a relationship there. But I think in our view, and as you know, we wrote a report on arms control in which we summarized that in our view, NATO, yes, had very much a dual approach, which combined dialogue, including arms control, with deterrence and defense. And that relationship is very much recognized. But in fact, arms control in that relationship often comes, in our view, often came second. We didn't think enough attention was being paid to the benefits of arms control. And we recognized in the report that this was, arms control is essentially a national responsibility. But of course, NATO does bring the nations together in consultations and produces a collective voice out of which you get the sort of words that were in the last strategic concept. So we would hope that the words of the reflection group would be taken, or at least the words of the reflection group would be given rather greater value and visibility. And that brings us up to where we are today, because we do have a new element in the sense that President Biden is someone who's deeply involved in the nuclear business and in arms control. During my time in Washington, I had the opportunity to work for him on the ratification of SALT II. And later he was the chairman of a special group that we established on nuclear weapons in Europe. And from that experience, I can tell you he is someone who really does understand the business of strategic arms and the business of arms control. And I can assume also that he will pursue the notion of arms control to the degree that he can, obviously with Russia. And we'll see, because it's just been announced that he will have a meeting with Putin in Geneva. And so that will be something that we'll be looking out for. And I personally would hope that he would encourage words in the new strategic concept that indeed give more visibility, a more positive visibility to the notion of arms control. personally, I hope that arms control will be given a bit of a boost in the new strategic concept, or the updated strategic concept as it comes to bear.
Nick, what do you think? President Biden shows a strong commitment to nuclear arms control, but how likely is it that within the alliance it will be possible to re-energize some unity when it comes to conventional arms control and risk reduction measures like military-to-military dialogue, while we know that here again we have very divergent views among nations?
Yes, Julia, you've hit upon the crucial question. And Katerina knows a lot about this from her expertise in conventional arms control. On the one hand, we can expect this summit to declare that NATO is boosting, enhancing defense and deterrence, one against and two against terrorism. But practically, most of the countries in Central and Eastern Europe are wary of, particularly conventional arms control, because they as enhancing the Russian ability to intimidate them by their superior armaments and political bullying. And so it's a matter of persuasion. And as ever in a declaration, a NATO declaration, or a strategic concept, words are found to paper over the cracks of sharply differing views. So I will expect that arms control will be given a boost rhetorically, but over the forthcoming period, even years, it'd be a hard slog in order to get NATO to take conventional arms control seriously in the way that Simon and I described in our report of last year, which were, as you said, Julia, it's essentially about risk reduction through armaments and transparency of exercises and so on. So rhetoric, yes, the substance may follow, but it'll take time.
I would only add that, and it was inherent in your introduction, we are at a very interesting stage in our relationship with Russia. We know how bad it is at the moment. And it's even worse, as I think, as a result of the most recent developments, which I think for most, many of us, and I'm referring now to the episode with the in Belarus, which I think for many of us are really almost a defining moment in terms of that relationship, because clearly there has to be some level of blame placed at the Russian door, in its unacceptability and so on. But at the same time, we then have the announcement of the meeting between Biden and Putin in Geneva. It'll be an interesting how tough he will be. Because on the one hand, it's in all of our interests that arms control, particularly in strategic arms and also in other, in tactical weapons as well, that those negotiations with the Russians continue. I mean, the nuclear threat is the constraint of nuclear threat is in everybody's interests. And therefore, we are, on the one hand, there will be encouragement for him to pursue that agenda with the Russians, but of course not at the expense that people will see of other issues to do with Russian behavior, to do with their interference and the general level of adversarial behavior that now permeates the relationship. So it's a very challenging position he finds himself in.
We're now coming to the end of our podcast, and I would like to close this session with a question to Katharina. I would like to ask you for a brief outlook. Making NATO greener, making defense actually greener, as you said in the beginning, is not something uncontroversial. It is something President Biden and Mr. Stoltenberg have a strong interest in, but that is not necessarily the view of all allies. So what do you think? How easy or difficult will it be for Biden and the Secretary General to convince the other allies that climate security and green defense is something they should embrace in the summit as well as in the strategic concept?
So on the climate agenda, I would go back to what Simon has mentioned, that NATO is not a monolithic organization. It's 30 members governed by consensus. So NATO is not starting from scratch. It has acknowledged that there is a link between climate and security in its 2010 strategic concept, but the consensus across the alliance is still growing. So on the one hand, you have allies who side with this agenda, but you also have those who do not really feel that this is or should be a NATO issue. And I think this consensus is still building. And there is currently a political momentum, which includes the US leadership, but also changes in other allied countries, that NATO should capitalize on to do more on climate change. We already know that climate change will be on top of NATO's agenda at the upcoming summit. This topic has been more prominent in NATO's thinking and communications over the past year. And the Secretary General has made it clear that climate change will be a priority. A positive development in this regard, in February, NATO allies endorsed quite an ambitious agenda on climate and security. And it is expected that an action plan on climate and security will be agreed at the NATO summit this year. In his speech at President Biden's Leaders Summit on climate, Jens Stoltenberg outlined that the focus will be on three concrete areas. First, it will be improving NATO's awareness and understanding of the link between climate change and security. The second one will be on adaptation, so incorporating climate considerations into military planning, capabilities and innovation, adapting our training and exercises, and ensuring that our militaries and equipment can operate in extreme conditions. And lastly, it's the mitigation and this growing recognition that NATO militaries have to take their share of responsibility and move towards military emissions reductions. The issue here is that at this moment, we don't know what military emissions reductions are. So first, you know, we would need to measure them before moving to any voluntary targets. And I think before concluding, that another positive signal is that the political and the military side of the house seems to be on the same page in this regard, because during a press conference following the meeting of Chiefs of Defense, Stuart Peach, who is the chair of the military committee, mentioned climate change, I think, on four occasions or four times, and he acknowledged that the effects of climate change need to be considered and integrated into NATO's military planning and exercises. So I think the outlook is positive, and I look forward to seeing what will be agreed at the NATO summit in June.
Thank you, Katharina Kurtisova, Nick Williams, and Simon Lunn for joining us in this episode of the East-West Coffee Shop. We hope you, our listeners, enjoyed this episode, and please tune in for our upcoming conversations. If you'd like to learn more about the YGLN, please go to our website www.europeanleadershipnetwork.org and follow us on Twitter at YGLNTweets.